This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. History books have documented the feats of track star Jesse Owens at the 1936 Summer Olympics in Berlin. He was heralded as a hero against the Nazi regime for demonstrating the lie in Hitler's ideal of Aryan superiority. But Jesse Owens wasn't the only black athlete representing the United States at the 36 Games. 17 other African Americans overcame adversity at home and abroad to represent America at the Olympics. A new film examines the experiences of these forgotten individuals. Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, traces their journey and political maneuvering, both by the leaders of the American Olympic team and Adolf Hitler. The film screens this weekend in Chapel Hill, but first I'm joined by the film's writer, director, and executive producer, Deborah Riley Draper. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited.
It's very exciting to talk to you about this, and executive producer Amy Thiemann is here as well. Hi, Amy. Welcome
back.
Good
to
have you
here.
So, Deborah, tell us about this. I mean, it's true we know a lot about Jesse Owens, and no, I didn't know much about those other 17 athletes. How did you find out about them?
Well, it's really an interesting story because I was actually investigating Valeda Snow, who was a jazz leader and a trumpet player from Chattanooga, Tennessee, who was interned in a Nazi concentration camp. So it's an African-American woman who was in a Nazi concentration camp. She was interviewed a decent amount when she returned to New York. And she mentioned these athletes. And in that article, I was in shock because I had never heard of any of them with the exception of Jesse Owens. So that's where the idea came from. And that's where the research jumped off.
And just to put a point on that, I mean, she was in that concentration camp because like a lot of African-American jazz artists, she made her way to Europe in those years. So now that and that leads you to these other stories. And remind us of what was going on and the dynamics around those Olympics in 36.
Well, it was really a critical point in history. We're at pre-World War II, and the country is divided. So America is split right down the middle. Should we support the games in Nazi Germany, or should we stay home? And it was a battle to get the country to actually vote in favor of going. And these 18 African Americans are actually right in the middle of this, because within the black community, there's a split as well. The NAACP says, don't go. We cannot have this opportunity to not stand with moral high ground. But the black newspapers and the churches say, we have to go. We have to show that we are not only worthy of this opportunity, we are superior athletes and superior students. So these athletes had the same conflict as the rest of the country. Should we stay or should we go? But they wanted to go because they knew how important this opportunity was to prove that African Americans were worthy of not only the opportunity to compete, but worthy enough to be American citizens.
Right. And so, again, and this whole notion, then it hasn't gone away, the idea that African Americans have to do something extra to prove their loyalty and something extra to prove their commitment and their citizenship.
Absolutely. Gabby Douglas and Colin Kaepernick have to prove that every single time.
Right. So it's still with us. But we're going back to 1936, and you interviewed Ralph Metcalf Jr. He's the father of one of these black athletes who was talking about this boycott proposal. Let's listen to Ralph Metcalf Jr.
My dad and Jesse Owens and the high jumper Dave Allbritton wrote a letter to Avery Brundage saying that they wanted to compete in the Olympics. They didn't want a boycott. You've invested your whole career in running. Running has brought you prominence. Running has brought you experience and exposure. Now, here come the Olympics, and you know, the height and peak of track and field, and we not going to go? Let's go over there and dust these Germans who think they better than us.
Ralph Metcalf Jr., the son of one of the black athletes who competed in the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin, and part of the film Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, that screens this weekend at Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hill. Film's writer and director and executive producer, Deborah Riley Draper, and executive producer Amy Thiemann are with us. It was a very close vote with the Olympic Committee, and we should talk about the Olympic Committee because he made reference to a fellow named Brundage who was himself a pretty outspoken or at least well-known racist.
You know, Avery Brundage was an Olympian, and Avery Brundage, as we talk about in the film, he had one goal, and that goal was to get to Germany. He was in support and in favor of the Nazi Olympics. And regardless of the maneuvering that was happening in the States, he was going to make sure that that vote made it.
pretty incredible. I mean, again, given the tension, some wanted to go there because they wanted to affirm the Nazi principle. Others wanted to prove it wrong. All of those dynamics all in play here. So now we have to get there, and we get to the Olympics. 18 African-Americans do make the trip. And again, there's a whole lot of discussion about who's going to make it and who's not, all around race. Two of the athletes, James LaValle and Archie Williams, talked about the opening. Imagine this. Now you're an African-American athlete. There's big debate in your country about whether or not to go, and there you are in Berlin for the opening ceremonies.
On the opening day of the games, we were bussed down just in front of the Berlin Stadium. Saw people on each side, and in front of these people were at least a double row of brown shirts, all in full battle regalia. And in front of those, a row of black shirts, also in full battle regalia. I felt that that day they could have marched to war right then and there.
They had this big sort of a marshaling ground outside the stadium where all the teams would be lined up. We had our white flannel pants and our Pat Boone shoes and straw hat. We were pretty close to the end. Hitler and Goering and Goebbels and all the so-called big shots were together there. They had a part in their ceremonies. So we were very close to where they were standing.
James LaValle and Archie Williams, two of the African-American athletes who represented the United States at the 1936 Olympic Games in Berlin. And that clip was from the film Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, that screens this weekend at Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hill. I'm talking with the film's writer, director, and executive producer, Deborah Riley Draper. So we look back in retrospect, and of course we see the importance that race played in all of that and how important those games were. How is it being received in the United States? Was that the understanding? Were people sort of watching the games with that in mind?
Well, you know, what's interesting, these are the first games that were actually televised. So movie tones could actually bring the games back to the United States so people could watch the games. But if you really looked at the African-American community, every single day there was coverage of these games in the black newspapers because the black newspapers sent reporters to Berlin to cover it because it was so remarkable. So that's how we're able to trace how they were feeling. So there was tremendous pride and tremendous respect for these athletes because they were doing something remarkable. And every single day they disproved Aryan supremacy. And every single day, whether it was recognized or talked about, people realized that this was more towards setting up civil rights and setting up the fight for equality that we would know and see emerge 10 years later.
You have a great clip with Andrew Young there who talks about his father taking him to a segregated theater. And he says he didn't do that. He didn't want us to sit up in the balcony like that. But this time he did because that newsreel was going to have the winning footage. And his father wanted to make sure he saw that.
It's critically important to build. Andrew Young talks about how it built his self-esteem. And that helped him understand the power of the black man in 1936.
But it's a real gamble because you actually have to win.
And that was part of the argument that was happening in the black community. What if we send them and they lose?
Amy Thiemann, let's talk about your connection with this film. You're the executive producer. Tell us about how you came to know Deborah and how you got involved with this film.
Deborah and I met through the Southern Documentary Fund. Last year, they had a convening for filmmakers, and I've been interested in filmmaking and started to invest in films. And I just wanted to go hear pitches. They had a practice pitching session on a Sunday morning up at Duke, and I just really wanted to hear good stories and didn't necessarily expect to become involved in one of the projects. But when I saw Deborah's trailer, heard her speak, just within minutes, I knew this was a captivating story and a very important story, and I decided I wanted to be part of it. So I joined on in May 2015, and we made our goal of having the film available by the start of the 2016 Summer Olympics.
And it's multiple stories. That's the interesting thing, or one of the many interesting things about the film. I mean, you have more than one story to tell. So you have individuals who all have their story in one way or another that plays a part in this much larger story. As a filmmaker, how did you make the judgment about sort of how to play those two ideas together in this film, the personal narratives and then the larger social story?
Well, as a filmmaker, I thought it was incredibly important that we get to meet and actually hear and listen to these athletes. Very rarely do we have the opportunity to hear the voices of college athletes from the 30s, especially African-American ones, but also to understand the dynamics of the political and social cultural landscape. We needed to hear about the Jewish athletes. We need to see the German landscape. We needed to see the American landscape, because that helps us understand the landmine in which everyone was operating in. And so that's how we allowed the story to be led by the athletes and then paint the picture of what they were actually facing, because that was the antagonist. You know, Germany, Jim Crow, Aryan supremacy, those were the antagonists, and these athletes were the protagonists. So they got to forge a journey for us to follow.
You talked about the Jewish athletes, and that was Hitler's problem. If they were going to prove Aryan supremacy, they had to win. There were some very good Jewish athletes who he didn't want to compete. He had the same problem that the Americans had, as racists who wanted to win. And so, but tell us about that, because it wasn't over once the team got there. There were a lot of dynamics in African-American athletes who were not allowed to compete and some sent home. Right?
Absolutely. Here's the funny thing about bias, right? In bias, you have to choose whether or not you stick with your bias or do you want to win? and these were the types of decisions that were being made, because you had to appease lots of different entities. And appeasing different entities, there were decisions made based on bias, not based on the best athlete for the job.
This showed up really big in the boxing arena, particularly, right?
Absolutely, with Hao King. Hao King was the best boxer in America in his weight class. But there was another boxer that the coaches wanted to box, and that gentleman was not African American. So even though he lost to Hao King twice, he was able to compete on the Olympic team in Hao King's spot. And Hao King was sent home. And the reports to the newspaper were that Hao King was homesick and he didn't want his opportunity to compete in the Olympics. He'd rather go back to Detroit.
And racism has a particularly interesting, it is exquisite to see how it works when it comes to boxing. Because then, as you say, if you want to win as a team, you might have to put aside your bias and play a black player. But winning means losing if you believe in white supremacy. Because if the black guy beats the white German guy, did I win or did I lose because I believe in white, the lie of white supremacy? I mean, it's incredible.
And that's why it's so complex. Yeah. And that's why we decided to play out that particular narrative, so you can see the complexity of this kind of crazy decision making.
Well, there's, and I think it plays out too. You can even hear it with the announcers. So what we're going to do is listen to the race. This is a race in which Archie Williams is competing, and we'll hear the announcer just try to figure out how he's going to call this race. Let's listen.
The final of the 400 meters. And here it is. Brown's in the outside lane there. Next to him, Williams, the American Negro. Look at Brown's tremendous stride, but he's taking it easy. He's holding his effort back rather unexpectedly. Williams is a beautiful mover. He's a black panther. He's not waiting. He's cutting loose. He's coming up on the back stretch. Very threatening. He's gaining. Hand over fist. Brown's going well, but he's leaving it too late. That Negro's dangerous. He's going into the bend. Williams will drive it home before they get into the straight. Brown's got to fight for it now. The Negro's got him. 20 yards from the straight. Williams is ahead. He's going away. Brown looks beaten. Roberts and Lavelle on the inside. Lavelle's going strong.
That's the announcer at the 400-meter event from the film Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, that screens this weekend at Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hill. Talking with Deborah Riley Draper and Amy Tiemann with me, who are connected with the film. That Negro's dangerous.
That Negro's dangerous.
Wow.
Did we hear that in 1936 or yesterday?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think we'll just run that clip regularly on the show every time we, you know, we and sadly, that's what's going on today. You talked with Germans as well, Germans who, some of them who actually went to the event, right?
We spoke with three German citizens, and they were all in one way or another either at the games or in the village. Two of them were at the games in 1936, and one lived next door to the Olympic Village, so he frequented the village. And their recollection was absolutely exquisite. But one gentleman in particular, he had an autograph book that he brought to the set when we were interviewing him. And inside his autograph book, he had the autographs of African American Olympians from 1936. So this young man, who was 12 years old at the time, was so enamored with these black athletes that he wanted their autographs because he thought they were so awesome. And he was a little German boy.
Yeah. Amy Tiemann, you've taken the film around the world, including Berlin. What was that screening like?
we screened for the European film market, and it was for buyers. And what really struck me is that the buyers came out with tears in their eyes. And we just felt a lot of support from Germany. And it's a different window on American history for Germans to look at. You know, we can't correct the wrongs of the racism and the segregation, the discrimination these athletes faced in their lives, but we actually can secure their legacy for the future. We can write this story back into American history. So we're taking it around the world with that goal to make sure that everybody knows about this story because it's an important American story
for
everybody.
Well, not only does it right the wrongs in restoring their story to our history, but Deborah, you've taken this film a lot of different places, including a halfway house where you had quite an experience.
It was incredible. There are two places we had incredible experiences. One was in Wilmington, North Carolina. We were part of the Kukaloris Film Festival Work in Progress, and we had to take the film to University's High School. And the last place on my list was this halfway house. And many of the gentlemen there had been in prison for murder. And so I screened the film, and immediately following the film, one young man who was 27 years old, who had been in prison 10 years already, and he was just out of prison for murder. He cried after seeing the film, and he remarked that he was struck because he didn't know his African-American history outside of slavery and Dr. Martin Luther King, and I just gave him a cultural inheritance that he could have and own and be inspired by and help him understand what he is as a Black man. And of course, I cried because that was one of the most powerful things that I've ever experienced. And the second most powerful thing is when we screened in Brazil and seeing the brown faces there who connected immediately to this film.
And there's more to come. The film has much more life ahead, and we appreciate you sharing the story with us today. Deborah Riley Draper wrote, directed, and produced Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. Amy Thiemann, executive producer of the film. Thank you both for being on the program today.
Thank
Our
you
pleasure.
So much.
Thank you.
Olympic Pride, American Prejudice is available on iTunes and Amazon, and it screens this weekend at Silver Spot Cinema in Chapel Hill and the Kukaloris Film Festival in Wilmington in November. We have all those details at our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.